This program is presented by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland, Michigan. This presentation coincides with programming on Midland Government Television, covering government affairs in the City of Midland.
Good evening and welcome to the September 17th, 2018 meeting of City Council. Please stand and join us for the Pledge of Allegiance. All right, Selena, would you please call roll?
Honorable Mayor Donker?
Here.
Councilman Brown Wilhelm?
Here.
Councilman Arnosky?
Here.
Councilman Adams?
Here.
Councilman Wozbinski?
Okay. Does anyone on council have a conflict of interest with anything that's on this evening's agenda?
No.
Okay, seeing none, we'll move on. That takes us to our consent agenda. All resolutions marked with an asterisk are considered to be routine and will be enacted by one motion. There will be no separate consideration of these items unless a citizen or council member so requests during the discussion stage of the motion to adopt the consent agenda as indicated. If there is even a single request, the item will be removed from the consent agenda without further motion and considered in its listed sequence in regular fashion. Can we have a motion to accept the consent agenda?
So moved.
Second.
Any item you'd like removed from the consent agenda? Anyone from the public like an item removed from the consent agenda? All right then, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? That passes 4-0. Well, this evening we have four proclamations, which is usually a lot of good news about things going on in our community. So the first one has to do with Fire Prevention Week, and Chief Coughlin is here to tell us about that.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Although fire safety is a year-round concern for us, it is of particular concern in the month of October every year because that's Fire Prevention Month, which holds Fire Prevention Week, which holds our open house. Each year has a theme. And to talk about that theme tonight, I have brought with me Fire Marshal Tony Lilo, head of our Fire Prevention Division. And without further ado.
Thank you. The theme this year is look, listen, learn, be aware. Fire can happen anywhere. And we're just taking a chance this year to, or an opportunity rather, to remind people to be aware of their surroundings, be looking for fire hazards at home, make sure they're checking their smoke detectors, carbon monoxide detectors. Even when you're traveling and you're going into other venues you're not familiar with, make sure you're looking for exits, know where the fire alarms are, know where your family is, having a plan.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Selena, would you please read the resolution?
This resolution authorizes the mayor to issue a proclamation designating October 7th through the 13th, 2018, as Fire Prevention Week in Midland.
Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Okay. Second. We have a first and second. Any discussion? All right, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right. That passes 4-0. And Selena, would you please read the proclamation?
Whereas the City of Midland is committed to ensuring the safety and security of all those living in and visiting Midland, and whereas fire is a serious public safety concern both locally and nationally, and all homes are the location where people are at the greatest risk from fire, and whereas home fires killed 2,735 people in the United States in 2016, according to the National Fire Protection Association, and fire departments in the United States responded to 352,000 home fires. And whereas the majority of U.S. fire deaths, 4 out of 5, occur at home each year, and whereas the fire death rate per 1,000 home fires reported to the U.S. fire departments was 10% higher in 2016 than in 2018. And whereas Midland's residents should identify places in their homes where fires can start and eliminate those hazards, and whereas working smoke alarms cut the risk of dying in a reported home fire in half, and whereas Midland's residents should install smoke alarms in every sleeping room outside each separate sleeping area and on every level of the home, and whereas Midland residents should listen for the sound of smoke alarms and when it sounds, responds by going immediately outside to a designated meeting location, And whereas Midland residents who have planned and practiced a home fire escape plan are more prepared and will therefore be more likely to survive a fire. And whereas Midland's first responders are dedicated to reducing the occurrences of home fires and home fire injuries through prevention and protection education. And whereas Midland residents are responsive to public education measures and are able to take action to increase their safety from fire, especially in their homes. And whereas the 2018 Fire Prevention Week theme, Look, Listen, Learn, Be Aware, Fire Can Happen Anywhere, effectively serves to remind us that we need to take personal steps to increase our safety from fire. Now therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim October 17th through the 13th, 2018 as Fire Prevention Week throughout the city and urge all people of Midland to be aware of their surroundings, look for available ways out of an event of a fire or other emergency, respond when the smoke alarm sounds by exiting the building immediately, and to support the many public safety activities and efforts of Midland's Fire and Emergency Services during Fire Prevention Week 2018.
Great. Well, gentlemen, thank you for being here this evening. Please accept this proclamation. And let me say, you know, I've heard it said, and it's a much better way to say it than I've heard, that the best way to fight a fire is prevention.
That is exactly right.
Okay, I got it right then. And so I think that the open house that you do every year, one, I've attended it, and I know that it's fun. It's a wonderful way to educate children, and when you get the children there, you also get their parents, and they're reminded of how important all of these things are. So thank you for the wonderful work that you do as a department, and you know, we're all pleased to be on the same team with you guys.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Item number three, which has to do with the crop walk, and Katie Geyer is here to introduce that to us this evening.
Hi, good evening. I actually have three proclamations for you tonight, but the first one is the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk team has presented this to us, and it is a proclamation recognizing Midland as a community responding to overcome poverty through the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk on October 7th, 2018. And I have Judy McDowell here with the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk team to talk about it.
Okay, great, thank you. Selena, would you please read the resolution?
This resolution authorizes the mayor to issue a proclamation recognizing Midland as a community responding to overcoming poverty, crop, and encouraging participants in the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk on October 7th, 2018.
Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? All right, that passes 4-0. Selena, would you please read the proclamation?
Whereas every day over 48 million Americans face the threat of hunger, and whereas for the past 45 years, the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk team has dedicated its time and resources to making Midland a community responding to overcoming poverty by hosting an annual walking event to raise funds and awareness about hunger in our community. And whereas the 2018 Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk will be held on Sunday, October 7th at the Midland Center for the Arts beginning at 2 p.m. And whereas proceeds from the event will benefit local nonprofit organizations such as the Midland County Emergency Food Pantry Network, Midland's Open Door, and the Salvation Army. And whereas the Crop Hunger Team Walk Team hopes to raise $30,000 in 2018 to support these organizations. Now therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby recognize the City of Midland as a community responding to overcoming poverty, crop community, and encourages participation in the Midland Area Crop Hunger Walk on October 7, 2018.
Okay, thank you. We're glad you're here with us, with your team.
That's right, part of my team.
Yes, so please tell us about the crop walk, a little bit about what's gonna be going on, and thank you for the work that you're doing out in the community. Certainly, this is really a very important issue for all of us to be aware of and to pay attention to and to support.
Thank you. Thank you to you, Mayor Donker, and to the City Council. We appreciate this opportunity to being affirmed for the work that is done through the Crop Hunger Walk. Perhaps you're aware that for the last 45 years, Crop Hunger Walks have been taking place here in the Midland community. During that time, over $1 million has been raised by members of our community to respond to the needs of hunger in our own community and beyond. And we are so appreciative of the number of community congregations, churches, places of faith, as well as civic organizations and student organizations that participate in the Crop Walk to take their hearts and their souls, and on one Sunday in October, to go out there into the community to raise awareness and funds for hunger response in our community. When you come on the day of the walk, you will see we are a very diverse community. We have representatives, and we are proud of the fact that 100% of the funds raised go to hunger response because of the communities of business communities, unions, and civic organizations that provide sponsorship for the walk. When you come on that day of the walk, you'll see the diversity also in our ages. We are infants in strollers, and those of us who are a little older who use different kinds of wheels to get around. But all of us are invited to find ways to take that step out into our community to make a difference to those in need. We personally invite each of you to join us on October the 7th at 2 p.m. at the Center for the Arts, because you too can help to make a difference in our community. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, that takes us now to item number 4, and this is two separate proclamations, but one presentation, and so Katie will introduce that.
Yes, it is. This is brought by the City of Midland, as well as by the Midland Area Community Foundation's Cultural Awareness Coalition, and two proclamations, but one resolution, and Gina Wilson, who is the chair of the Cultural Awareness Committee, will explain a little bit more about this partnership and why they're actually under one resolution. The first is proclaiming the week of September 28th through October 6th as Midland Neighbor Week in the City of Midland. And the second is proclaiming September 28th through October 31st as Cultural Awareness Month in the city.
Okay. Thank you, Katie. Mm-hmm. Selena, would you please read the resolution?
This resolution authorizes the mayor to issue two proclamations designating the week of September 28th through October 5th, 2018 as Midland Neighbor Week and September 28th through October 31st, 2018 as Cultural Awareness Month together in a new joint partnership.
All right. Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So second.
Second.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? All right, that passes 4-0. And please read the first proclamation.
Whereas the City of Midland prides itself on being a welcoming, giving community where people can care about each other, and whereas September 28th is recognized nationally as National Good Neighbor Day, and whereas the city seeks to further encourage neighboring and inclusivity in the City of Midland, in the Midland community, which promotes safer neighborhoods and better resident well-being. And whereas the Cultural Awareness Coalition of the Midland Area Community Foundation is celebrating Cultural Awareness Month with the theme Migration, Home, and Belonging, to promote the importance of inclusivity, welcoming, and goodwill in building a strong community. Now, therefore, we, the Mayor and City Council of the City of Midland, Michigan, do hereby proclaim the week of September 28th through October 5th, 2018 as Midland Neighbor Week in the City of Midland as the official kickoff to Cultural Awareness Month.
Thank you. So we have two proclamations
Great.
For you, so that means you have a lot to tell us
I
about.
Do.
And I'm very pleased that you're here tonight. And let me just say, as it relates to neighboring, we're very pleased as a city to be a part of that, because this is something everybody can do in our community, is be a good neighbor. So we're looking forward to hearing what's going to go on with that, and a little bit about Cultural Awareness Month.
Fantastic, thank you. These are two existing initiatives that have gone on for a number of years. Again, my name is Gina Wilson. I am the chair of the Cultural Awareness Coalition through the Area Community Foundation. And we adopted a vision this year for our coalition to see Midland as an inclusive community. where all can feel at home, where all can feel a sense of belonging, where all can feel considered. So it was a natural blend with the neighboring initiative of the city that's kind of tackling the same thing, that we get to know each other, and although we may have many differences, the Cultural Awareness Committee has adopted the Sharing Our Stories theme, because it's through our stories and our narratives that we may hear a story that's different from ours, but in that narrative we may also find a commonality that connects with us and connects us as neighbors and connects us as fellow citizens of Midland, of the United States, of the world. So that is our hope through our activities that we have planned for the month. Again, neighboring, the September 28th is neighboring, National Neighboring Day. So we're hoping that a lot of neighborhoods and citizens just can organically, very small, connect to their neighbors, and will be, maybe even if it's just more friendly on that day and wave to the person that you're passing on your street. And then throughout the month, we will have activities around the theme of sharing our stories of migration, home, and belonging. One of the larger events that we have is our annual creativity contest, where we in the past have invited students to create art pieces or narratives or interview people in their lives around the theme. This year we're actually adding an adult adult piece where adult community members can also share their stories with us, and there's a culminating activity at the end of the month where we share those pieces that maybe encompassed a story that we haven't heard before or a viewpoint that we really wanted to share and highlight. Additionally, we'll have speeches and talks throughout the month. They will be marketed through our Facebook page as well as Creative 360, which is a partner of us, and we'll have many events throughout the month, all free to the public, all around the theme of migration, home, and belonging.
Okay, great. Thank you very much for being here this evening.
Thank you.
And let me just say I want to thank Katie too, for the work that she's done on the neighboring project for the city. And I know that there will be something up on East City Hall. So if you want to take a selfie with your neighbor or your new friend that you've met, please do that, and feel free to go out and post that or post whatever on East City Hall as it relates to what you do in your neighborhood or in your classroom as it relates to neighboring. So Katie, thank you for the work that you do on that too. All right. That takes us now to public comment. This is an opportunity for people to address council on issues that are relevant to council business, but not on the agenda. Is there any public comment this evening? Okay. Please come up, and I need you to just state your name and address, please.
My name is Jennifer Vandy Zandy. I live at 509 Rod Street. I'm here to address council about the future use planning that is going on right now, as well as the overall future master plan for the city. I live what seems to be in kind of a very odd zone. We live between Indian and Grove, and about 10 years ago we were added to the DDA, and I had asked questions then about what that meant as a homeowner in that area. And was assured it didn't really mean anything different at the time. When I started seeing the future use plans come out, I started asking questions and met with Grant. And it was then that I discovered that actually our zoning has changed, and the blocks where I live and that are north of Indian are all residential homes, but the zoning actually doesn't indicate residential at all. And in July, when we came down and got a map, what we're in is called the Downtown North Side Overlay. The future use plan calls for it to be part of the downtown. Again, it won't be zoned residential at all, is what I'm understanding. And that if anything were to happen to any of those homes, we would actually have to ask for a variance to be able to rebuild. I went around this afternoon to talk to my neighbors and put together some signatures for you to ask that you please consider looking at this area that I'm talking about. The starred names on there are actual property homeowners there within that area. And our concern is, and what we're asking for, is to look at being part of Midtown, primarily because we sort of identify more with Midtown. I also have business owners on there where we spend our money, Cahoon's, Sid's, the coffee shop. That's what we consider our neighborhood. And it feels like, as a citizen who's trying to be engaged and get some answers, it's a struggle to get some answers about what is happening. I know that I've watched all of the houses. I've owned that home for 13 years, so I've watched all of the houses being knocked down. I see the development coming. But there are people who live there and have raised their families there and who want to stay there. And it feels like if you're making a future use plan that doesn't even acknowledge that we exist on there, it feels like it's actually a disservice to the people who have lived there. All of those houses are at least 100 years old in that area. And the thought of them being gone is very difficult to consider. So I would just ask council to please, before you approve a master plan or the future use plan, to please pause and consider the people who do live here. We're stakeholders too, and we care about our community as well. And we would just like to have us considered as part of this plan. And when I went to the planning meeting last week, it appeared that several members were surprised at how that strip has been zoned. They weren't aware that residential wasn't part of it either. So I just wanted to be on record, on public record, as saying that is an area that people do care about, and especially with the school, having gone in, our kids, you know, children attend that school, they play at the park. So that is just my public input.
Okay, great. I thank you for that. Our next item on the agenda is we're going to be having the master plan discussion, so we'll take a look at this during the discussion phase of that particular item. So thank you for being here tonight. Okay, any other public comment? Okay, sir, please come up, and if you would state your name and address also.
Yes, I'm Stacy Leroy Daniels. My wife and I reside at 3901 Orchard Drive, near the corner of Orchard and Sugnet Road, near the hospital. We've been there for about the last 50 years or so, and as I've grown up and Midland's grown, beginning in the mid-40s, I graduated from Midland High School, and over the years I've watched over the civic pride swelling and outpouring, akin to our rivers rising in the floodplains, if you will, but not subsiding. I've observed a progression of proposed and forgotten civic improvements and fully support those proven to meet definable quantitative needs and directed toward our common good. I've also witnessed changes in capacity building, in streetscapes, public event venues, and business developments. By way of background, I'm a professional environmental engineer and very familiar with the infrastructure of the local roads and sidewalks, the water supply, the wastewater collection, and the solid waste management. I would like to make a few brief comments to contrast between old directions taken by the city in the 1950s and new directions more recently expounded as we flash forward to the 2020s. We seem to have progressed from the city of modern explorers to the city of postmodern watchers, and losing a bit of our own initiative and combining and losing a common sense of direction, not only not only on where to go, but how to proceed, and there may be critics to that viewpoint. More limited separation of pedestrians and cyclists from vehicles is promoted by national trends purported to benefit occasional intermittent non-vehicle traffic, while ignoring fundamental problems with contiguous, more predictable vehicular traffic. What is perceived to work elsewhere might not work locally without seeking sufficient input from those actually affected, and this deals with the road diet, which is later in the resolution of tonight's program. Back when I was young, most of all the houses and businesses and towns had mailboxes in the street bearing real numbers, and all the streets had signs. More limited separation, you could find your way around town just by looking around. you could easily offer directions to strangers of the best route to get from here to there. Now just try to visually explain that to folks who rely solely on their cell phones or their GPS units. I remember when US 10 ran through the circle, nay, Midtown, our granddaddy rotary, if you will, and summer traffic backed up for miles on weekends until the bypass was constructed. I also remember when Indian and Buttle Streets were two-way single lane until M20 was rerouted from north of town through downtown. Now some want to put obese roads on a traffic diet and revert back to more congestion. Back in the 50s, Sugnet Road dead-ended in the east at Concord Street and to the west at Old Main Street. And we're still waiting expectantly for the extension of Sugnet Road to be put out west to the northward to relieve traffic. An item repeatedly promised for decades and now finally scheduled for 2019, fingers crossed. When I attended the old Central Intermediate, now Grove Park, I rode my bicycle across town on roads that were devoid of designated bike lanes. When I attended the old Midland High School on Rod Street, we walked downtown for lunch. The old rule of share the road is still seen on signs on city streets. It should be respected and enforced for all modes of transport. Witless pedestrians are distracted by cell phones and cyclists ignore stop signs at crossroads. We've evolved a policy set for sidewalks for all our residential streets, but we accept a lack of sidewalks at our schools, hospitals, and malls. We just simply walk across parking lots, oblivious to our surroundings. I certainly do not intend to denigrate the collective sense of civic pride nor criticize the generally positive promotional efforts by individuals and corporations. I commend both our city for its services and the citizen visionaries for their shared perspectives. I certainly am not a Luddite that is opposed to new technologies or way of working. I've used computers since 1953. I also do not wish to voice personal pet peeves, a few may slip in. I only direct these modest observations at a few attempts at apparent progress or regression. You can be the judge of whether they are misguided or ill-timed. And thank you for your consideration.
All right, thank you for your comments. Are there any other public comments this evening? All right, then seeing none, we'll move on to item number 5, which has to do with the master plan. And Mr. Marshall's here to tell us about that.
Thank you, Madam Mayor and members of council. Tonight I want to talk to you about the proposed updates to the city's master plan. This is chapter 5 of the city's master plan. If you recall back when we looked at this back in July, you remember that there was just a specific look, or it was targeted at chapter 5 for the future land use, the map itself, but also text within chapter 5 as well. If you recall as well, we did talk about in July that it is a requirement of the state's Michigan Planning Enabling Act to review the master plan every 5 years. Our current plan was actually last reviewed and adopted back in 2016. In the beginning of this year, back in February, Planning Commission initiated the review to take place that we'll talk about this evening. And as part of that review, it was intended to just be an update, not a full rewrite of the master plan. So this does pertain just to future land use. When we take a look at the process itself, you can see back in Planning Commission's, they kicked off this process. In March, we began scheduling public input opportunities, and we held 6 of those back in April and May. The intent of those public input opportunities at the front end was really to gather feedback in the drafting of the plan and the changes at the very beginning parts. And then from there, staff took that comment that was received and created a staff draft that was proposed to Planning Commission in June. In 2 meetings in June, the City Planning Commission reviewed those and ultimately passed along a recommendation of a draft that all of you received back in July. And in July, this body did act to initiate the 42-day public comment period, which is a statutory requirement by the state. That public comment period passed between July and August, and then last Tuesday, the Planning Commission held their last public hearing on the plan itself. And so I'll talk a little bit about the results of that, but that's really where we stand today. Procedurally, I'll talk a little bit about where we go from here at the end of the presentation. So within the changes, or what you may see and what I initiated or articulated in the actual letter of transmittal to all of you, is the 2 changes that have taken place since July itself. The first one being the removal of the Midtown area, parts of the future land use map, and the second being the addition of a commercial expansion at 300 Joseph Drive. The removal of Midtown followed quite a bit of public input that we received during the public hearing at last week's Planning Commission meeting, of which a number of business owners in that area really wanted to address their concerns related to future changes and how the zoning could be dealt with in the future within that area. Ultimately, the Planning Commission decided that rather than push forward with under a bit of a misunderstanding between what was being envisioned and what the property owners were understanding was being envisioned, they felt it was necessary to take it off of the plan itself and be able to move forward with more conversations in that neighborhood in the future at a later update. So it was essentially set aside and set onto a list for future consideration. The second part of the changes is at Joseph Drive, and I'll talk a little bit more about this when I get to the northern commercial areas. This is just off the intersection of Joseph, Joe Mann, and Jefferson Avenue on the north side of the city.
So Midtown is going to stay as is until further discussion?
That is the recommendation from Planning Commission.
Okay.
And then all other contents within this are as seen during your last review of this back in July. I'm going to go through each of these individually. We now have 5 areas of consideration as opposed to 6 on the map, and then we have the one change or proposed change within the text of Chapter 5 in the multi-use center for the South Midland redevelopment area. So with that, I'll dive into Center City. Center City has 10 specific revision areas. A lot of these relate to the future land use map, simply better matching the existing land use and the existing zoning. As part of the public input process, we did receive one written communication, but that was really relating to zoning constraints within the Circle District itself. No one participated in the public input opportunity on May 8th, and then following discussion on June 12th, we did have 2 additions to the map, Midland High and Emmanuel Baptist Church. The current map itself is what you see highlighted here with the 10 different areas scattered from the south at Creative 360 all the way to the north, just off of Boston Street. Notable changes that you see within this when I change to the proposed map is the change to recognize the post office here at Bayless and Rod to be institutional and civic. Midland High going from low density residential to institutional and civic as well. Changes of office service and commercial on Bayless and on South Saginaw Road. And then 3 areas here off Virginia Park, here off of Ronan Street, and then also off of Boston, changes from public parks and recreation to the surrounding residential classifications or designations there. Other changes included through Creative 360 and the City Park just off to the northwest, property recently developed by Habitat for Humanity at the intersection of Jefferson and East Haley, the city's Fire Station 1 and surrounding properties, and then Emmanuel Baptist Church here at Cherry and Bayless Street.
Grant, as we look at those colors, the colors that are reflected there are the, like, take where the fire station is, for example, on Haley. Mm-hmm. That is how it would look. It'd be blue with that orange square, or is that all going to be changed?
This is as proposed. So
as proposed,
yes.
Okay.
Yep. So this first one was as it is today, and then this
okay.
is the proposal.
All right, thanks.
Okay, next area, the city that was looked at is what we're calling Lower Downtown and the Riverside area. Within this, there's 4 specific revision areas, again, all relating to future land use, better matching the existing land uses, as well as anticipated future development. Within this area, we have not received any public input, but we also have, we did make an available, and notify of an available opportunity on April 10th. With this, you'll see 2 of the areas are actually road right-of-way, and it's mostly just a cleanup of the map itself. This third area is an area surrounding, you have Winan Street, you also have McDonald, Main Street, and then Rod. And then the last portion, or the fourth area, is part of the Tittabawassee River, and then the area of the former 4D, which is currently planned for heavy industrial, and the right-of-way of Poseyville Road that abuts that. So as you'll see here, what's being proposed is changing the former 4D area to be public parks and recreation. The area around McDonald, Main, and Rod to move to downtown in line with the zoning, as well as the use of these parcels, and then the cleaning up of the 2 road right-of-ways on Gordon as well as Ashman Street.
Grant, who owns that property that butts up against Main Street right now? Is that the city owned or is that privately owned?
These here?
Yes.
You actually have a part, so this is Rod Street and it's right of way, and then a portion that's the Riverside Place Senior Living Facility.
Right.
You then have the city-owned parking lot that's in the back here, and then this piece here, as well as this little tiny leg, as well as private property.
Because if the way it was Parks and Rec, which to me implies that it's city-owned property, but it's, I guess, that's why part of it's not correct, because
that's
you wouldn't
correct.
Have Parks and Rec as a privately owned property, but you do have a piece of that, at least, that's the city-owned. So What's the consequence of changing that from Parks and Rec to a, I forget what we're calling it.
The downtown?
Downtown?
Yes. I don't know if there's consequences. The thought process behind this and what's been discussed at the Planning Commission level is really the fact that all of these have been developed for either surface parking lots or for buildings themselves, which is in line with what the zoning district is there as well. That if I were to have the zoning map up, you would see in this area, it's all, in fact, this area up into the Tridge and the Farmers Market is all the D downtown zoning. So really this is, I don't know if there's necessarily trade-offs or sort of what maybe your question is, but I think it was more of a matter of simply trying to better align the use itself with what is around it as well as then the designation for downtown.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that whole area down around the farmers market, and especially if it's city-owned, I mean, you've got parking lot, for example, still is Parks and Rec just towards the river.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure why we want to change. I mean, I'm okay with the other sections because it's clearly developed or privately owned, but the parking lot seems like it should remain consistent with the area around the farmers market. Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you can, if you follow the logic is you've got a lot of that other area that is parking lot right now, and why not have all the city-owned property remain as Parks and Rec?
Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
I can see that argument there. I think other things to consider is we do have city-owned property that's also in the downtown designation, whether that's Riverside Place here or the area known as Putnam Park in between Cronkite and George as it forms Poseyville Road. So within our downtown district, not everything that's publicly owned is identified as a public parks and recreation. It's also not identified as institutional and civic, which is something that we apply to other publicly owned spaces as well. One other thing that was considered and discussed as part of this is you have the 1% chance or the 100-year floodplain line that roughly runs along Ann Street itself. And so a lot of the areas that you have within the city's master plan, if you were to take this image and zoom out, you actually have that public parks and recreation designation over a lot of areas that are actually deep floodplain of the Tittabawassee River. And so that was part of the thought process, too, was really kind of aligning this line with the floodplain itself that's really intended to be conservation and not have development on it so that it can function as a floodplain.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you obviously have given more thought to it than I have just seeing it here and thinking about it when we saw it as part of this proposal. That's just the one section that kind of stuck out with me is trying to figure out why. I mean, do we intend on developing it, we as a city? I look at the other rest of it, it has been developed, and so you are doing what Grant has kind of presented is reflecting, you know, the existing situation, the reality of what it is. But
I think what you'll find in this particular location is, as Grant indicated, number one, there are floodplain considerations that go in throughout the area, but also Ann Street effectively functions as the distinguishing or brake line, if you will, between the area that we typically look at as parks or the riverfront area, then the parking that's associated with the Tridge and the parking along the riverfront versus on the north, I'll call it north, side of Ann Street, which is really associated with Riverside Place or the commercial businesses that front towards Main. And it is more of an indication of intent that these are areas that we associate downtown versus areas that we associate with the riverfront. So it's a fine line. It's a valid comment, but that essentially makes sense just from a distinguishing point of view.
Yeah, I don't have a stronger reason to oppose it. I just wanted to kind of explore it a bit. Thank you.
Right. Our next area is what we're referring to as the Northern City Limits area. This area consists of four specific revision areas. We did have 8 written comments that were received back in April and May. We did have approximately 30 people that attended our open house that was held at the Midland Evangelical Free Church on April 26th. As part of this, and you'll recall our discussion during the last meeting in July, that we've floated the idea of mixed-use planning around the mall area. In addition to that, there was actually specific requests, 3 of which that were considered at that time, for expansion of commercial, expansion of office service, and expansion of residential density within this area as well. I'll talk about each one of those when I have the map up. So one thing that should be of note is on the very north side around Commerce and Jefferson and Letts, there's 3 areas that we are addressing. One is the right-of-way of Commerce Road itself. This was actually a street that was built by the city and extended to Jefferson, and so for a long period of time before the surrounding properties were annexed, it was its own little bit of extension there, and so there's a future land use designation that was applied to that. What's being proposed is simply cleaning up that right-of-way to better match the surrounding designations as well. I'll talk a little bit about this area to the southwest of the intersection as well as the southeast of the intersection. That is currently planned. The brighter yellow is medium density residential. You have the lighter yellow, which is low density residential. Down here at the intersection of Oak Brook and Jefferson, area that's just to the north of Bickford Senior Living, that's proposed to go from low density residential to office service, which is the pink shade that Bickford is designated as. You then have Wildfire Credit Union, which is at the location here to the southeast of Joseph Joman and Jefferson Avenue. And I'll talk, the 300 Joseph Drive parcel is this parcel immediately to the east of that location here. I'll talk a little bit more about that. And then you have the mall area itself, which includes the former Midland Holiday Inn or Midland Resort on Wackerly, all the way up to Joman, which is proposed to move to the multi-use designation. So as you can see in this image, the changes up on the north, again, are to reflect within the right-of-way the surrounding designations. Per the request of the property owner, this property is actually being proposed to change from medium density to high density residential. Also at the request of the property owner, this parcel on the other side of Jefferson is being proposed to change from low density to medium density residential. As indicated, office service is the designation that's proposed for this property here at Oak Brook and Jefferson. And then just off of or the Wildfire Credit Union site, going from office service to commercial. And actually, Selena, if I could switch to document cam.
And Grant, everything you're talking about is still within the city limits. Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
Because they get kind of jaggedy.
Well, actually, I should say, I do need to point out, I apologize that this is a little difficult to see. But property that is here off of the intersection of Jefferson and Commerce, this is actually outside of city limits currently. And you do have this property here that's also outside of city limits.
So why are we dealing with it?
It's all within our MUGA boundary. And so the city actually has a long history of applying future land use designation all the way out to the Midland Urban Growth boundary area.
But when it seems like when we annex property, we annex it in the same character that, in this case, it would be probably Larkin characterizes it as. It sort of just comes in that way.
That's correct.
Now, there could be an inconsistency between which one rules. I mean, if you have Larkin says it's, I don't know, agricultural or something. And
But typically, when we annex into the city of Midland, we have, 5 years to align it with our master plan and designation?
Usually within 2 years' time, we try and apply a city zoning district. So, yep. Councilman Arnosky, to answer your question, when it comes into the city limits upon annexation, it does have the zoning that's on it is that jurisdiction zoning when it comes into the city limits.
Right.
And then within that 2 years' time is when the city applies a zoning district.
What's on that property now, do you know?
Both are vacant.
But why are we doing the multicolor, making it more like a patchwork as opposed to making it consistent with the property next to it if it's just a vacant piece of property?
In reference to both of these properties here?
Yeah, that's where I'm focused on.
Yeah, so a couple of things. One important thing is it's the request of the property owners to have this designation. In consideration of that, amongst the broader planning objectives of the city, you can see that the Jefferson provides a natural boundary between areas that are lower density than areas that are higher density. So if you go a little bit farther to the south, you do have the E. Free Church there, which is institutional and civic. And so you have then even higher densities as you get more into the commercial portions of Joe Mann and Ted Doan in those areas. And so it's a matter of kind of containing density and not leapfrogging density over one another, but then stepping density down from higher to medium to lower as you go away from higher parts of density. So within this itself, having Commerce and having Jefferson are two natural delineations between a higher designation, density designation, and then a lower or medium density designation, and then a further lower density designation.
When you jump back to the presentation, when you do it, you don't need to do it now, but when you jump back, you might just want to explain that in a larger context.
Sure.
Yeah, because I mean, to me, I'm a layman in this area, but you know, when I start seeing multicolored boxes, you know, it looks less like planning and more like, you know, something that's cobbled together to, you know, accommodate things as they are or things that, you know, somebody's asked for, as opposed to really a plan. And so that's why, especially with respect to property that's not even part of the city yet, it seems, you know, it's the tail wagging the dog. I mean, you as the planning director and the planning commission should be leading this, you know, dictating how you want this to be rather than accommodating a request. I mean, at this stage, especially,
because
it's empty land.
Well, and I think we have to consider that part of this is again, it's built with the public input, and so we weigh very heavily what the requests of the property owners as well as the neighboring area desires for that designation. We have to very much be cognizant of the wishes of the property owner, but again, we have to be mindful in guiding our decision-making with the broader objectives of the city. So it's very much a fine line of how we balance that. In this particular case, Planning Commission and staff has felt that the requests of the property owners are within the considerations of the broader planning objectives, and having these densities in location, although it creates a patchwork of colors, if you will, it does make sense in application based off of how they're buffered from one another and how they step down with natural barriers.
It just struck me that the comments we heard earlier from Ms. VanderZandy about the desires of the homeowners or the property owners and this approach need to be harmonized. Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think the other important point that's missing in this discussion, though, is that we can't control, obviously, what the township does with the property as long as it remains under township jurisdiction and hasn't been annexed. But what we do is we look ahead and we plan for the time if and when it does become a property within the city limits. And at that time, we want to make sure that our long-range planning, which is this document that Grant's working on today, and you'll be asked to approve or support or not, supports where we're heading as a city. If and when it is annexed, then the zoning can follow the master plan. If we were to wait until that was done, the annexation is done, that is, we'd have to go through this process before doing the zoning, which is a long and cumbersome process. That's why we plan for this in advance.
Is the is that the Mooga line that's at the top of the map here?
It's not. The Mooga line is actually closer to Monroe, which is about...
Right. And so what's, I guess it'd be nice to see what was north of that.
Actually,
right, because if you're talking about a master plan, why, you know, and you're talking about one block here, is it consistent with what's north of that?
So
parcel?
To the north of this, we do have on the west side of Jefferson, you have medium density, and on the east and north, north of Letts, east of Jefferson, is all low density residential. So from there, it expands with a buffer of medium density and then low density behind that.
Okay, so sorry, I don't know the colors as fast as you do. So that piece there you've got, is that low density? So the one on the east side of Jefferson is
medium.
Medium?
Yes.
And the one to the west side is high?
Is high.
Mm-hmm. And then going north of that is?
Medium.
And then on up is medium?
And then you have a little bit more of medium here. And then from on the other side of that is actually low density residential, which is off. If you're farther up. And these areas is all low-density residential.
But when you're doing the planning, you still consider the transitioning into the different zones, right?
That's correct.
So we would never put, like, industrial next to a residential.
Well, but, you know, you're looking across, you've got the, you know, the dark gold and then the pink and then the whatever orange. I mean, this is where, to me, I see a patchwork. I don't see a plan.
It's a transition.
Well, but the transition over there, not over on the other side. It doesn't look like a transition to me, but I'm just here to try and understand right now.
Sure.
Go ahead. Please continue.
One thing I do want to point out while I have this map up before I go back to the PowerPoint is the proposal for the extension of commercial designation. This is for not the entirety of that site itself, but it actually leaves about 200 feet of office service designation on the very west side, which then abuts the property that has Ivy Terrace on it as well. So property owner has submitted a request that this be extended, the commercial designation be extended. Per the discussion of the Planning Commission, it was decided that ultimately the buffering of the office service on the east as well as Joseph Drive on the north does provide enough of a buffer for future commercial in that property that's currently vacant.
Okay.
If I can switch back to the PowerPoint. The last area, which is the multi-use designation around the mall itself, this is where the changes to Chapter 5, the text itself, have been articulated. And so going into that, the text that's being proposed for Chapter 5 itself, and within Chapter 5, each of the future land use designations that are on the map, so the colors that are on the map itself, they each have a specific page dedicated to articulating really what the vision is for that area. So it talks about future characteristics, it talks about built form, it talks about how well certain uses mix with other uses and how types of uses can actually buffer more intensive uses from lower intensive uses from one another. And so this is actually what's being proposed for the North Commercial area within Chapter 5 for the multi-use designation. And reads, as consumer preferences shift, regional mall areas have found success in other markets by converting to a mixture of uses that support a lifestyle center. The multi-use center designation of this area is intended to allow for a mixture of uses that are compatible with the surrounding commercial uses and the abutting residential uses to the south. This area should allow for a mixture of residential, office, commercial, retail, medical, and recreational uses that can support a lifestyle center. Design elements within the center should facilitate access by people while allowing for ease of access to the center by automotive and public transit. Do we have any other questions on this north side, or I'll continue on to the next area?
Just so I understand again, multi-use basically includes everything that's currently being operated on that site?
Yes.
So just like the areas next to it and north and to the east and I guess to the west as well?
Correct.
It just allows some additional uses?
Correct. It envisions more of a mixing of uses as opposed to simply just commercial.
Why stop there? Why not extend it?
A couple of reasons. That was actually a question that's been asked of the department a number of times. It's been talked about at Planning Commission. One of the things is that what we're doing is actually introducing a very new type of development and a type of division or vision within this area. And so part of the consideration was if we not overly limit, but simply try and look at an area specifically within that broader commercial area, could we start there, and then maybe if there was interest and support for that, eventually move further along. The other thing too is that the regional mall itself has a built form that's on it that in other markets has been successfully converted to what's being called the lifestyle center, but also you can hear them as mixed-use centers or other things like that, which really is where malls themselves have actually been converted to allow for medical use or office use or senior housing or other residential types of use. So that was part of the consideration. So it is a different type of planning. Previous or in the current master plan, we actually only have two multi-use areas, and what's being proposed is move that to four. And so it is a different kind of approach and a different style that I think we should move forward towards. It's certainly something that's aligned with best practices across the nation for planning, but it's something that we should be very intentional about.
I mean, obviously, we all want to kind of reinvigorate the mall, which has a lot of vacancies right now. And so in our zeal to do that, I want to make sure that we're not creating, I mean, we know we have congestion problem there. Is there any sort of downside to doing this that you're aware of in reviewing how this is being used in other communities? I mean, kind of just put us on, I mean, something that we should be thinking about
right.
Right now it seems like, geez, we should do anything to support helping that that mall area kind of come back to life a little bit more. But I want to make sure that we're not, in our eagerness to do that, overlooking some downside.
Sure. I think when you've seen, if I can speak just a little bit to that, in other areas you've seen, certainly when you introduce other types of uses, people are driving there or maybe even living there and walking to other uses as well. The dependence on automobile is not necessarily as high. It's still very high as it's all serviced primarily by roads. But I think one thing that you could see is if there was introduction of multifamily residential or other types of uses, you'd be able to drive there, park, and then be able to access a number of uses as opposed to simply just a retail use that you'd be going for as your place. So I don't know if that answers your question. I think I think as kind of it, we move forward, and of course this is again just kind of the master plan itself. What would then need to be implemented would be zoning district that would be specific or more in line with the vision of this, and then from that you actually have then the market itself that would have to say, well, we'd like to do some type of development here, and you'd have the site plan review or the conditional use that'd come as a part of that as well. So the layers of how we would eventually get to new development out there, it certainly would go through quite a bit of additional considerations for traffic as well as parking and everything else that we regulate as part of that.
Yeah, my experience here on council is that this master plan has a lot of weight given to it. Mm-hmm. So being very thoughtful about the master plan is important, and that's why I'm kind of asking these questions that I am about making sure that we have the thought and making sure that as you come before council, because we haven't been brought along with all the thought processes that the staff has gone through, that we're not given that we're given the pros and the cons, frankly, so that we can make an informed decision. So that's why I think about multifamily residential, and I really don't think I want families running around in this, what it's a very commercial area. I can appreciate having some maybe non-family or no kids type families there, but that's, I don't know, I'm just thinking out loud more than anything else right now. Thanks.
Okay. The next area is the Sandell Road and Isabella Street revision. This is two areas that are identified for revision. This is a very similar to the lower downtown and center city, which is changing the future land use map to better match existing land uses as well as zoning. As part of this, we did receive one written comment and two comments that were received during the public input opportunity on April 10th. What we have out there currently is a property that does not have a future land use designation that's within the Muga boundary. On this map here, you actually have the Muga boundary in red, and everything to the top and right or up and right is all within the city limits. Everything to the south is Homer Township, and then off here to the west as well. So what you have in this area is properties that do not have a designation currently that need to have a designation, as well as all of these do have zoning that have been applied to them. You also have a portion of property that, at the request of the property owner, was annexed entirely into the city limits. Even though it's outside the Muga boundary, because it's within the city limits, it is appropriate for us to apply a future land use designation that then would allow for future zoning consideration. So what's being proposed is changes on the north side of Isabella Street for commercial and office service designations to better match the existing uses as well as the zoning districts on the north side of Isabella. You then have two office service designation parcels that match the uses there. Residential that surrounds them, low density residential on the south as well as on the west. And then that parcel that was annexed into the city, it is surrounded by Homer Township on three sides, all used for either vacant purposes or for low density residential. And so the proposal is to have that be designated entirely as low density residential. Okay. Any questions on this one? And the last area that was part of the consideration is the Waldo Avenue and Bay City Road corridors. This is four specific revision areas, and as part of this, we did receive 22 written comments back in April and had approximately 60 people attend our open house at Salvation Army on April 12th. One of the questions that was being floated was how do we best mix the desires of the additional commercial and industrial development with the existing residential, institutional, and other commercial and industrial uses within this area. Ultimately, it was decided to apply a multi-use center designation to property on Waldo, as well as expand commercial designations at the request of property owners, but also at the discussion or considering additional considerations for surrounding properties. There are some additional expansions of commercial and light industrial to the north of Bay City Road, and then expansion of light industrial on the south side of Bay City Road around Faustdyke's Drive, and I'll take a look at each of these individually. On the very north side of this area, you can see properties that are planned for low-density industrial, and at the request of the property owners are being proposed for commercial. Area off the north side of Bay City Road and the west side of Rockwell Drive, currently planned for high-density residential, properties that are vacant, largely along the railroad tracks with a couple single-family homes along Bay City Road, as well as area that was the former drive-in movie theater that's currently planned for commercial purposes. The multi-use designation that I'll talk about is within the Waldo Avenue corridor here. A lot of these properties, if you recall, participated in the buyout program that was offered as part of the South Saginaw Road closure project. It also does include the Salvation Army property as well. And then areas off of Faustdyke Drive and Rockwell, see plant here for commercial purposes. This is property owned by Fisher Companies that kind of loops around the actual railroad here, and then you have a little sliver of land just to the south of the city civic arena, as well as property that's currently agricultural just off of community mental health and the property that was currently or formerly used as the Columbia Pipe facility. So what's being proposed is actually a change of these areas to industrial purposes with the delineation between high density residential and industrial being the railroad tracks. On the north side of Bay City Road, you do have change from the high-density residential and commercial to additional light industrial designation. The reasons for this is the request of the new property owners here at Rockwell Drive and Bay City Road for additional light industrial, as well as the thought was to keep commercial uses on the frontage of Bay City Road with light industrial behind them, still having access to the railroad right-of-way. Off of James Savage Road and Waldo Avenue, you have properties that are currently planned for industrial but proposed to be changed to commercial designation. This is property that you may recall was part of a rezoning request to change to commercial, and so what's being requested is actually changing the future land use map to facilitate future change to commercial zoning. Same with property on the south side of James Savage as well. Here in this particular area, we have quite a bit as it currently sits of industrial that abuts former railroad right-of-way and then right into a low-density residential development. And so this, even though it's not the entire length of the low-density residential development, does in fact provide a little bit more of a buffer between the light industrial as well as the commercial land uses and then the residential land uses. When it comes to Waldo Road itself, the dark purple that you see here is the multi-use designation, and I'll read the text that's being proposed to accompany this to really cast the vision for this area. But you do have some properties on the very south side, one of which is a power transformer location that is planned for industrial purposes, light industrial purposes, that abuts the industrial complex off of Schutte, Waldo, and Centennial Drive here. Within the text itself, what's being proposed for Waldo Avenue to articulate that vision is this. As traffic patterns shift along Waldo Avenue and Bay City Roads, development along this corridor should be compatible with higher traffic counts while also fitting well within the context of an established residential neighborhood. New development should be designated or designed to support the retail, restaurant, commercial, office, and service needs of the immediate neighborhood and the surrounding subarea of the city. The built form in this area must be compatible with existing institutional and residential uses that are within this designation or are in the immediate vicinity. I went through that a little bit quickly, but are there any questions on these areas? All right. Moving on to the last portion, which is just a text change. There's nothing being proposed as part of this when it comes to the future land use map itself. But what we do have here over off of Jefferson, as well as Indian and Buttles and the fourth and third streets that are within here too. We have an area identified as multi-use center within our master plan. We actually had text that really articulated more of the vision for where East End is located as opposed to this area, which is intended or visioned for high-tech industrial. So it's being proposed to change in the future land use text in Chapter 5 is this, that the area east, southeast of the ballpark is currently home to a mixture of commercial and industrial uses, and redevelopment of this area will include a mixture of high-tech industrial, commercial, and office uses that compatibly bridge the area between residential uses to the north and the higher intensity industrial uses to the south and southeast. Immediate proximity to the US 10 business route corridor positions this area well for connectivity to the rest of the city and the region, while close proximity to the downtown district provides easy access to eating, shopping, entertaining, and recreational assets.
Do you mind going back to the map again?
Yes. Then?
So what's being changed here?
So the map itself is not being changed. This is what is current, and what is being proposed is the same. But what we don't have in the master plan at the moment is any text that articulates the vision for this multi-use area.
Is the, well, it's up here. I'm trying to figure out what constitutes the Midtown area. It's kind of covered part, I don't know, if any of Midtown is shown on the map on the upper corner there or not.
So,
because we talk about it, but we haven't really, at least in my mind, I don't have defined.
That's correct. So Midtown is different than Center City and downtown. There isn't a specific boundary of Midtown. It's really just recently entered the vernacular, I think, of Midlanders, and it's really a concept of the residential area and the commercial and industrial areas around Rod and Ashman. But if you look at actually the association that's formed, their website does define it all the way over here to Haley and I believe this is Forney Street. So really it's this residential neighborhood here and everything towards Rod and Ashman, which are off the page to the north, and all the way up to really areas around Carpenter and Eastman and those residential neighborhoods.
It looks like this at least has, well, it's what you have downtown. And I think that goes back to the question that was raised, where does downtown end? Does it look like that on the master plan or a future use? Because that's got a jagged, it looks like it's Indian in one place, and then it's, maybe it's not quite DeGrove on another.
Correct. So by and large, where the delineation is actually the mid-block point between Indian and Grove Street all the way till it gets to Rod. And then between Rod and Ashman, that entire block that fronts to Grove Park is actually within the future land use designation as downtown.
Okay.
Yeah. Let me see if I have a map here that might better indicate that.
Page 29 of the agenda packet does include the entire future land use map.
Right. That's the resolution on that's not so good.
You can zoom right into it, though.
Okay. Will be helpful here. Thank you. So what you can see in this, what's being shown here is actually you have Rod Street in this location. This is Grove Park, which is this green. You have Rod Street, then you have Ashman Street on this side. And if you follow this delineation here, it's right at the mid-block point between Indian and Grove. But then when you get closer to Grove Park, it actually is the entire area, the entire block itself all the way through Grove that's planned for downtown purposes, which is that light shade that you see.
Okay. Do you know when did we decide that, what the downtown boundary would be?
That was part of the master plan considerations in 2006, 2005, and 2006.
Okay, wasn't me. Well, but this kind of the points to my questions earlier when we talk about how we're doing things. We're talking about something that was put in a master plan 12 years ago, and now things are changing, and you know, we're still beholden to the master plan, but the master plan is really not that flexible a document. So as we look at these other changes that are proposed, you know, like the parking lot down by the farmer's market, or like the section up in the northeast section of town around Jefferson, you know, it doesn't seem like we're giving it a whole lot of critical thought at a city council level. You know, it's kind of proposed and you're given it, but then once we do it, you know, it then is in place and it governs actions for, you know, 10 years or more onward, which doesn't really make me very comfortable, honestly, on some of these things.
But I think with our planning group, I mean, those are the professional planners that are working with those in the city. So I wouldn't expect us to get into the nth level of detail and study that the planning commission does or the planning department. That's why we depend on them to make the recommendation.
Right, but then when I hear that we're doing something because the property owner asked for it, as opposed to, you know, the planning department saying this is how it should look.
Yeah, but we can't tell property owners what to do with their property.
But it's not even within the city limits right now.
Well, true.
All right, and the other part is the property owner is the city.
But if it should be annexed into the city, I'm sure they have an idea whichever, whether it stays outside of the city or in the city,
well,
what they want to do.
My tail and dog situation. I mean, if the planning department ought to be, you know, ought to be the one driving the decision-making as opposed to, well, the property owner requested it. And then you look at it and you see different, you know, what I describe as a patchwork, without, you know.
To clarify that, Steve, planning staff is not saying that just because a property owner requested it that it's being supported and recommended. That is critically looked at by the staff and as well as the planning commission in response to a request from a property owner, and then a decision is made to recommend or not recommend that. But a request on its own does not stand, and that would not advance and recommend a change to this plan simply because of that. So if we misrepresented that that's the basis to get to you, that's not the case.
Yeah. Thanks, Graham.
All right, and then the last part of the presentation is just to talk about kind of how we've gotten here and where it goes from here. Tonight is your consideration of this and ultimately looking for a recommendation back to Planning Commission. Per the state's Planning Enabling Act, it's the Planning Commission that actually has the authority to adopt the master plan, its final adoption. And so if considered this evening, it would move back to Planning Commission for their meeting on the 25th next week. And with that, I'll entertain any additional questions.
All right. Any questions for Grant?
What's your thought process on the revisiting the Midtown portion of this, or just it's going to be indefinitely delayed, or what's?
So I think one of the things that we saw last week was a misunderstanding as to kind of what the vision was by the property owners that were there, and a lot of concerns related to zoning as well as potential marketability for the future of their properties if they would ever want to sell. And so I think that to me really spelt the need to have more consensus building within that neighborhood. And so I think going forward, it's going to be really at the burden of planning staff to initiate conversations in that neighborhood, whether that be through another open house or other type of public forum, where we really could hear their concerns and from that reach a better consensus for what the future look should be in that area. And I think as part of that, there was a lot of business representation that came forward, but this area of course is a mixture of residential, it's a mixture of industrial business and new commercial businesses, and so I think we'll want to include all of those since they do have a stake in all of that.
Yeah, and as I understand from your, but so we don't have a set timetable to work off of, but just to reiterate what I think you said, or at least I heard you say at different forums, you really want to retain the character of that Midtown area as it stands today, which is a combination of residential and light commercial, I guess is maybe the way to call it, although you have a number of different things. That's your overall objective.
It is. I think if you were to drive through there and build or want to build something like Sid's Party Store or other buildings like that, you'd actually find that our zoning ordinance makes those illegal to construct without having to go through a variance process. And so I think part of the discussion is really taking a look at what's the regulations that are out there currently, and if you were to try and build any of those businesses or any of those homes today, would you be able to? And so before we go changing a zoning ordinance or a zoning regulation, we really should talk about sort of the vision for that first, have that then create the mandate that then is taken into the zoning ordinance changes and that consideration. So it's really about building on the pieces before we start making any changes to law and regulation.
Okay.
Any other questions for Grant? Okay, thanks, Grant.
Thank you.
All right, any public comment? I just need you to come up here and state your name and address, please.
Patrick Panosik, 2525 North Eastman Road. I want to mostly speak to and I said this last week at the Planning Commission, commend the planning staff for the work they've done on this, and this is not an easy task by any means. We are the property owners that were referenced on the corner of the north section of Jefferson and Commerce Drive, and we've been involved in this process for the last, I don't even know how long, probably the last 40 years when there was discussion of Commerce Drive. We gave up the land to provide Commerce Drive, the access to Commerce Drive and the road put in by the City of Midland, or the street rather. And although it may look like it's a patchwork or a color work, I can tell you that going back to the meeting in the box and prior, it wasn't. There's been a lot of deliberate work. And I think that the recent change that was requested at the public hearing to change that from low density residential to high is reflective of the conditions in the community. Between Diamond View Farms, Sabella Woods, which is planned for this next coming year, and others, just by my calculation, unvalidated, there's at least 4 to 5 years of low-density residential property in the City of Midland to be built on. And when we requested that, the high-density residential was to reflect, and we own all three of those colors, reflect the what we believe is the future need in conjunction with the city and the Planning Commission, and also to provide the transition, the buffer, the recognized buffer for the last 40 years or thereabouts between residential, office service, and commercial. So those are shown there specifically and by design, and I can assure you that the city, in my experience, just doesn't do what the property owner wants, but I'm glad they at least consider it. And I think there's been some good planning going in this. So I just wanted to clarify that point, that this is not something relatively new. It's been ongoing for a long period of time. Okay. Any questions of me?
No. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right, any other comments from the public? All right, seeing none, Selena, would you please read the resolution?
This resolution will approve the proposed updates specific to individual areas of the city and will, one, amend the land use designations of the master plan as shown on the future land use map, and two, update the associated text within Chapter 5 of the master plan.
Can we have a motion to accept the resolution?
So moved.
Second. Okay, first and second. All right, discussion.
I think we're headed in a good direction. I am happy to hear that we are going to keep Midtown out of it so that, you know, the residents in that area and the business owners have a chance to work with the planning department on the future. As far as the rest, I would say the Planning Commission's done a very thorough job getting to where we are today. I haven't received any comments opposing any of the recommendations, and quite a bit of that is in Ward 4, so I plan to support it.
All right, any other comments?
I guess I likewise echo the comments about keeping Midtown out. I think I think the boundaries ought to be considered as I looked at what's in downtown and what's not and what you consider midtown. I think you ought to really capture all the residential as part of the midtown area as opposed to downtown when you're talking about the areas. Maybe not right abutting Indian, but certainly once you back off of that street, a city lot or two. I'll trust the planning department and on the decision on that northern city limits change. To me, I don't like to see the patchwork. It doesn't, like I said, I'm not a planning professional, but when I see a patchwork, it doesn't really remind me of planning. It seems like it's cobbled together. But I would like to see the area down by the Tridge and the Farmers Market, that city-owned parking lot, to be left with the same character as the other city parking lot area. I think I'd feel more comfortable with that. I think we could look and manage those properties as a whole. You know, it seems weird to have one parking lot be Parks and Rec and the other not. So I understand Riverside and I understand the private property, but I would probably draw the line differently. I'm not sure if that parking lot that's zoned downtown didn't flood last year. I'm guessing it probably did. So that's my only probably constructive comment on this.
We had a lot of discussion earlier in the year about asking a rezoning of the property on Waldo Road next to the expressway spur, and that brought up some discussion, and I think the attendance at the Salvation Army discussion related to Bay City and Waldo Roads, I think the notation said that there are 60 people there. There's been a lot of discussion by those businesses there. There's been a lot of disruption recently with businesses closed on Bay City and Waldo, and putting in the new lanes and sewers and water problems that they've had there. But I'm glad to see that the plan seems to look forward for a number of years, and some of those properties, as Grant mentioned, one of them used to be a drive-in movie theater that I attended many times as a kid. And
did you sneak in the trunk?
No, I didn't. But I'm glad to see, there are changes. The jail went up out there, and there's a cornfield in front of it, and mental health is out there, and looking forward to that part of the city, I think, has been well thought out and will be appreciated in the long run.
There has been a lot of time and effort that's gone in by a lot of people into this process, and certainly we appreciate the community input that's come in, that's come from the residents of our community as it relates to what their thoughts were. Could Brad, could either you or Grant comment on this letter for me, on like where this would fit in this process? Does this fit in this process, or is this
from the letter that was received this evening?
Right, as it relates to Midtown, and because as I read it, how I would read this, it would be that the homes are there, and the issue would be is if something happened to one of the homes, they wouldn't be able to rebuild, and that would be the major issue.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's an important point to understand, firstly, okay, is that there's a distinct difference between a master plan and the designations that are applied through the future land use map of a master plan versus the zoning that is applied to an individual property. The zoning dictates today what can be done on a property and what could not. I don't know. I don't have it in front of me what the zoning of these particular parcels are, but if they are zoned residential and they're compliant with the residential standards, regardless of what this master plan says, they could rebuild if they wish to. They could sell, and it would continue to be allowed to be used as a residential special use. They could make additions in compliance with those districts. All of those things would be allowed. All of that said, the proposal that's coming forward from the Planning Commission that you will be making comments back to them on is changes to the master plan tonight. Mm-hmm. And there are no changes by virtue of the fact that the Midtown area and some of the policies that would have been specific to those areas have been withdrawn by the Planning Commission until there can be further discussion. So this, I think, is an appropriate discussion point, starting point probably between the Planning Director and the property owner in terms of where the concerns are and to make sure that there's a clarity on both sides. And then secondarily, it sounds like from what Grant has indicated, there will be a continued discussion at the Planning Commission level to say, what do we really do with the Midtown area? It may or may not extend down to these areas, and I think that's part of the discussion that will take place. So nothing that you have in front of you, in short answer, will change the standards that apply to the individual's property that spoke tonight. Down the line, that's something that further discussion is needed on, though.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think, Brad, that the area that was raised is now part of downtown, and the question is, as you look at, it's not a thing that will impact our decision tonight because it's not a subject of what's being proposed, but I think what we're sort of suggesting is it be considered as you do further research and community input as far as the Midtown area and where you draw lines.
Yeah, valid comment. The other point I should make as well is that between Grant and I, we have had discussions over the last few months in terms of once this amendment to the master plan is completed and it's updated and these immediate changes are implemented, there's a need for a broader review, quite frankly, of the master plan. Even though we don't often amend the master plan and it's meant to be a fairly static document that has really a 20-year vision or goal in it, and it should therefore be fairly static. There are times, however, where you look at it and you go, there really is a need for an updating of it in a more comprehensive sense. We believe we're at that point with the master plan, and we probably are going to need to bring in outside consultant help simply because of our staffing abilities and the amount of staffing time that we have to dedicate to a product like this. Excuse me. And so we probably, quite frankly, will be proposing that in your budget for next year.
Okay, well, so there you go, heads up on that.
Mr. Keenan might not know that yet, but we're going to have that discussion with him too.
Okay. All right, then, any other discussion? All right, then, all in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay, then this passes 4-0. All right, then, that takes us now to new business. Is there any new business, Mr. Cave?
No, ma'am.
Any new business from anyone else on council?
No.
All right, then, can we have a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second?
Second.
All right. All in favor? Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? All right, we are adjourned.
This program is presented by the MCTV Network, a service of the City of Midland, Michigan. This presentation coincides with programming on Midland Government Television, covering government affairs in the City of Midland.